We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not right now.
No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the ball. That gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast. Thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports Podcast, where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo, and it is the third annual rom-com month on Big Screen Sports. It is February. We are talking about rom-coms, like I said. Today, we are doing a movie that I saw for the first time, and my two guests, my two co-hosts, Alex McDaniel and Caroline Darney Love, we are talking about 27 Dresses. Spoiler alert. Really enjoyed this one. Great episode. As I told Alex and Caroline, as soon as we finished recording, they are both in their bag for this one. So I think everyone's going to enjoy it. Before we get into it, I want to shout out our Big Screen Sports Patreon group, especially our Big Chill producer level patrons. That is Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Yeager, Mike Trees, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Class Stadium Fire, Jason Alva, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Andrew Teagle, Benjamin Bauman, Jeff Essis, Anthony Scafone, and Taylor Logan. Biggest thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting the show. Patrons on this show, in addition to supporting the show, they get to vote on movies for the show to cover. They're picking a movie for Rom-Com Month. They get to participate in our live watches on the Big Screen Sports Discord. We did one last month where we live watched Clue. Not sure what we're going to do this month, but it will be something. It will be a rom-com. It will be a lot of fun. So if you want to support the show, keep this thing going, head on over to patreon.com/bigscreensports. And with that, let's get into it. Me, Caroline Darney, Alex McDaniel, talking 27 Dresses. All right, returning to Big Screen Sports for the third annual Rom-Com Month. We've done this three times now. She is the managing editor of For the Win, Alex McDaniel, and she is the co-host of For the Water Cooler and the from Bet for the Win, Caroline Darney. Stumbling over my rom-com month just has me shook. Guys, welcome back to the show.
Thanks,
you're on all the time.
You're all a flutter from watching this movie for the first time.
I know.
I am. Tonight's is a first-timer for me. First-timers club for this one and something else on our rom-com slate that I will not reveal at this time. But how is everybody? How are we?
We're tired.
So tired.
Yeah. I told God. Elmo when he asked yesterday that I was also tired.
Elmo got a lot of answers he was not ready for.
That is one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the internet, because like obviously I don't know who runs the are they Muppets? No, they're not Muppets.
Yeah, they're Muppets.
Yeah.
No, like Muppet accounts. You know what I mean? Like who's running the Elmo social media account?
Elmo. What do you mean?
There's some really nice like 27
the Jennifer Lawrence. What do you mean?
Yeah. What do you mean? That's like some nice 27-year-old woman's like sitting in her apartment thinking she's like doing this mental wellness month thing. It's going to be such a fun, like, and just like everyone on the internet trauma dumping on you. But to Elmo and having them be like, you know what, Elmo, it's kind of shit right now, Elmo. Like, I don't know what
incredible.
It is. The funniest thing to me. So,
anyways, how's it going, y'all? Caroline, you had the great Ryan McGee on For the Water Cooler.
Yes, Dude, it was so, like every it is just so much fun during this that podcast. Like, we've had so many amazing guests, and like Ryan McGee is just a wonderful person to talk to.
The best.
Like, he's such. We've only met like twice in person, but he treats you like. He's just so kind and thoughtful, and like remembers things, and so gracious with his time. And that was one of the quickest replies with what he wanted to talk about, which is like Star Wars. And I was like, any movie in particular, just Star Wars. And I was like, all right, perfect. And we had just a great conversation about like, it just really resonated with me because we talked a lot about how he has that connection, like him and his daughter, like to go see Marvel and Star Wars together, and they've been able to do those things. And it was just really like reminding me of time I spent with my dad when I was growing up, and like the things that we bonded over, like aliens, you know, and Star Wars, because my dad recorded them off of television. And I didn't see episode 4 for the longest time because we didn't have that one recorded off of TV on a VHS tape. but yeah,
you didn't grow up in the 90s if you did not have movies bootlegged off the TV.
Yeah. And he always tried to like cut it with the commercials. And so then he would like hit record again too late and you miss like 30 minutes of like the movie. And so anyway. But yeah, it was a really, really fun episode. That's out now. So give it a listen. And by the time this comes out, we'll have Jason Kirk as the next guest. So you guys just talked to Jason Kirk.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. We did. Another movie I saw for the first time.
Pretty sure the one that he picked for us is going to blow my mind.
What's it called?
I have to look it up again.
Hold on. Who's in it?
Yeah,
I don't know. I need to hold on. Let me go into my text message.
So, who's in it is a fun guess. Is it Kirk Cameron? Is it Scott Baio? Is it?
I have some. While she's looking that up, I have some fun nerd pop culture news on my end.
Yes.
So, the other night, Jack and I are. First of all, for those who have been watching Love on the Spectrum since the first season, which is 2019, I guess. Amazing. I just did not watch the show. I was worried it would be okay. This isn't about Love on the Spectrum, but I want to give some background. I never watched it because I worried it would be exploitative, like TLC shows are, you know. Mm-hmm. And I recently discovered it's this absolutely gorgeous, amazing, nuanced show, and whatever. Anyway, there is a person on that show who ends up going on a date at Comic-Con. She's into animation, and you know, Jack and I've like gotten into things because he's into them, like Star Wars and Marvel. And he said, is there a Comic-Con in DC? I'm like, well, I'm sure there's something. Like, so we look it up. Right now he's going through not only a major Star Wars phase, like he's seen them all, he does everything, but a major Anakin phase. Like evil
like
Anakin.
Jackson Dart.
Yeah, like Jackson Dart. so we click on DC's Comic-Con, which is called Awesome Con, and guess who's gonna be there this year? Hayden Christensen. So we got the premium badges and we got the $200 photo op. Jack requested two people. He wanted the photo op with Hayden Christensen, and he wants an autograph with, I can't remember his name right now. Y'all will know it. He plays Hank on Breaking Bad. My son has never seen Breaking Bad.
Oh, yeah.
I
can't remember. Dean. Yeah, so, Dean yeah. something. Man, so he's no one has ever looked more like a Dean or a Hank than that
right?
guy.
But I was like, Jack, you've never even seen Breaking Bad. There are a lot of people. And he's like, yeah, but I know the lore. So I'm going to a con.
Bless
him. I got to figure out a costume. Like, we should do a special episode of Big Screen just for the con.
Let's do it. You have to ask Hayden Christensen. You have to be the only person in that con to ask him about Shattered Glass.
Okay. I knew you were going to say that. Yes. Because the other night when I found out that the photo op cost more than the VIP badge for this thing, I was like, calm down, Stephen Glass. Everyone likes you. We're not mad at you.
Really good movie. Really
fantastic.
Good movie.
Shattered Glass. Everyone watch it.
Okay. Yeah. I looked it up. I looked up the movie. And actually, you might be able to. It's a big movie star who is the lead in this movie that Jason has picked.
Is it a Christian?
Is it an evangelical movie?
Yes. Based on the title, I think so. Matt forbade me from looking up anything.
Oh, is it the fucking the human trafficking one with Jim Caviezel?
No. No, he wouldn't make us watch that, I don't
think.
It's
not The Passion of the Christ, is it?
No.
Also with Jim Caviezel?
Jim Caviezel is not in this movie.
Is it Frequency with Jim Caviezel?
We have done multiple movies that star this person, and we're gonna go steal.
It's Left Behind with Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
Yes.
I know nothing about it, but Matt texted me the other day and was like, said something off the wall, and I was like, what are you talking about? And he was like, oh, it's the movie that Kirk picked. And I was like, oh, okay.
Perfect. Perfect.
So anyway, look, everyone can look forward to that.
So I'm going to get us, I'm about to segue into a segue. So Alex mentioned Love on the Spectrum, which is a truly like as a delightful program. You know what else is a delightful program? Is Jury Duty, which Caroline, you and everyone else has to watch. Incredible. Jury Duty is one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. Loved it, loved it, loved it. We just finished it. Jury Duty starred James Marsden. You know what else stars James Marsden? The movie that we're doing tonight and going to talk about 8 minutes and 30 seconds into the podcast. We are talking about 27 Dresses, the 2008 rom-com. After serving as a bridesmaid 27 times, a young woman wrestles with the idea of standing by her sister's side as her sibling marries the man she's secretly in love with because her sibling is the fucking devil. I added that last part. Starred Katherine Heigl, James Marsden, and Malin Ackerman. It was directed by Anne Fletcher. This is about to be a real don't shoot the messenger moment. This got a 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
What?
Yes.
40%?
Guys, this was a first time watch for me. Caroline, where does this hold up in your rom-com echelon in the rom-com, you know, where on the pantheon?
Elite of elite. It is one of my absolute favorite rom-coms. And I'm saying, like, I put it up there. If I could take, like, two rom-coms with me for the rest of my life, it's, like, this and Set It Up. Like, that. Those are my choice. And I understand, like, there's just something about the vibes of this movie. And a lot of it is there's really dry humor. There's a lot of, like, Judy Greer is fantastic. Like, she's just really been fantastic in, like, everything. Mm-hmm. But her, like, best friend is hilarious to me, and so that her sense of humor kills me. It's a fun, different story, I think. Like, I don't even see anything else like it, type thing. And James Marsden, I don't know who, no offense to his agent, but they should have been fired, because the fact that this man was not in two rom-coms a year for his entire career and instead played every nice guy that lost the girl, like, how does that happen?
Can't lose someone you never had, Caroline. Can't lose someone you never had. Let's not talk about Allie and Noah on this podcast.
I know.
It's wild that he's a Pats in so many movies. Even in Westworld, it's really frustrating. It's surprising because you watch this movie and you're like, that guy should bang out 10 of these movies with no problem.
He's so, so charming and so handsome. And he's got really good comedic delivery. He has all the things you need in a rom-com lead. He's good looking, but not so good looking that you're like uncomfortable. Like, I don't know. They definitely, like, we'll talk about his clothes in depth later. But he doesn't look intimidating or like too much. His hair is the perfect length in this movie.
This is 2008. Like
very... Yeah,
it's a little long for today, but for 2008, yeah. It was ideal.
Like, especially because there's a lot of bad haircuts in this movie, and he's got the best one of that.
Yes,
era.
He escapes all of that.
He just has good hair.
He does have good hair, and he's got incredible cheekbones. Like, you could, I don't know.
Cut glass with them.
Yeah, there you go.
I almost said you could bounce a quarter off. And I was like, that's not right.
Oh gosh, he's just lovely. The charisma, the smile, the eyes, the look. He's just, yeah, he's fantastic. So I love this movie. I think it's so funny. I love it. I love it. It's been, and I watched it like on repeat in flight school. Like, this was like 2008. Pensacola, Caroline, and my best friend.
Top Gun and 27 Dresses.
Alternating.
Take My Breath Away and Benny and the Jets on repeat.
We'll get into Benny and the Jets. We'll get into that.
Alex, I feel confident in asking you this question with zero prep, and you're going to be able to walk me through it. But the Katherine Heigl career, Katherine Heigl is a lead, and then kind of her not disappearance, but certainly
fall
like
from grace.
Fall from grace. Can you walk me through that and your thoughts on her in this movie and just in general when she's in something good?
So yes, and it relates to like the bigger story about this movie in general. I do think this movie more than any other I have probably any other we've done, not just in the world. I probably have more background info on how it got made. So that's going to tie into it too. When we talk about Katherine Heigl, it's easy for me to kind of forget all of that happened. If you remember, you know, she was kind of this breakout star on Grey's and rumors started coming out that she was difficult to work with and she wasn't, you know, very cooperative on set. And she later admitted to that. She was like, I was young, I was cocky, whatever. But they mended those fences. But like at this point in time, she was still kind of like a rising it girl. You know, she had just done Knocked Up. She was cute as could be. She was on this very successful show. They cast her, you know, in this movie as like an ideal rom-com lead. And she absolutely was. But around this time too, and look, I'm not a Katherine Heigl expert, so there's a lot here I'm sure that I don't get. I'm just telling you how I remember it going down. Like, you had all these cute movies she was in, but she was also starting her life at this time. I think she was engaged or she had just gotten married to Ole Miss alum Josh Kelly at the time. One of his songs plays in the movie, by the way. Her life was kind of getting started and she was really leaning into like building a family. But like when she left Grey's, you know, I think at that time you had all these like great rom-coms coming out, and I think it just kind of dried up for her. And because of her reputation, you know, it's one of those things like if people write enough stories about you, it's really easy for people in power to believe them. That's why like celebrities get so mad about stupid rumors and tabloids. It's not because they're worried about people in Oklahoma believing it. It's because if they see you as the uncooperative one, then you're not gonna get jobs. But I will say, in recent years, she's had quite the comeback. I think if you haven't watched Firefly Lane on Netflix, please do. You will cry for days. She was on Suits. She's very talented. I mean, even the people who worked on this movie said it was incredible because when she came in for the first table read, she had just wrapped Grey's. Like she had been up for 24 hours. She came in and nailed it. Sat down, nailed every single line. Like just consummate pro. But this came out when people were still very charmed by her and you didn't have all these rumors bringing her down. So it was kind of a perfect time for this to come out.
I think the ugly truth kind of, I don't want to say that flopped. It flopped. It was a little floppy.
I just remember being made fun of. I don't know how it did, but the fact that I can remember that.
Yeah, you know? That's the thing. That's what I'm saying is I remember it not getting a ton of like good attention. And it's not as fun. It's nowhere near as fun as this one. It's much more of the like rough around the edges type of, you know, like trying dirtier jokes and whatever else.
Sure.
I think that was happening the same time that a lot more of these stories were coming out. And it was like that charm, like you said, had rightfully or not been like taken off of her. And I think she is so lovely in this.
I was massively impressed. Extremely. I thought she was fantastic. She was the perfect mix of like desirable, but you could also believe that she had kind of painted herself in this corner and was, you know, because typically the argument with all rom-coms with a lot of them is, oh, this woman would not be single, but she painted herself in the perfect light of why she's potentially single, why, you know, it, but also how like charming and the chemistry that she could have with James Marsden. I love Knocked Up. I just love all the Apatow movies. But in talking about like Katherine Heigl and all this, like this for me, I haven't seen a too terrible amount of her filmography, but this is it for me. Like I thought she was fantastic. I was truly blown away by how much I enjoyed her because I don't think about Knocked Up because of that. I think in Knocked Up, she did get, I think there was kind of something in that movie too of like, she seemed like a real like stiff and kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, the movie makes her seem kind of bitchy, but then when you watch it with an adult lens and be like, she was stuck with a total fucking loser and trying to have this loser's baby. Like she was a saint in that movie. And, which is something I didn't have with my 19-year-old eyes when I saw it the first time.
But also sexism, like just, this was still a time in Hollywood when it's like incredible to think back on, you know, if a man is difficult on set, he's just Harrison Ford, you know, like mm-hmm. it's just like he's naturally cool if he's cold, if he's icy. But this is still very much during a time when like women being anything other than nurturing was a problem. And like, you know, they had to be the best friend. They had to get along with, I mean, it's very much the Barbie monologue, right? You have to be part of the sisterhood, but you have to always be grateful. And, you know, and I think the fact that she outwardly, right or wrong, the fact that she was just very vocal about her work process or what her boundaries, whatever, that stuff gets out and you get reputations really quickly. And that stuff, especially when you're a woman, it doesn't leave you. I mean, think about it, like Christian Bale's outburst. Think about Tom Cruise's outburst. Like, has it ever affected them? I mean, Tom Cruise is a Scientologist and he's like, oh, everyone loves him. So, yeah. A woman,
Top Gun 3, baby, let's go.
A woman who is rude, her career cannot survive. So,
well, she's excellent in this, and it was a shame there wasn't more of this. Alex, I will kick it to you for the IMDb chair. I'm assuming that both of you are putting this as a Hall of Fame rom com.
Yeah.
This is like gut reaction for me, but I would say this is a Hall of Fame rom-com. I don't really see many warts in this. Like it checks every box that you want a rom-com to check. And I feel good and confident about saying that. So Alex is handling the IMDb trivia tonight because she is the trivia queen of the show. So I will take it away.
So I think I only have one thing from IMDb, but I want to tell you like a short for me, a British version of how this movie got made and almost didn't get made. Because I think it's really easy when we look at rom-coms, especially in the early 2000s, it's formulaic, right? You the pretty girl and the cute guy and there's a conflict. Da, da, da. It's not unlike really any story since the beginning of time. But I think especially in the 2000s, it all looked like it just fit a template. And this one, if you didn't know anything about how the movie got made, you would think that too, that it was all for commercial gain. But really, this movie started out, so the writer is Aline Brosh McKenna, who also wrote The Devil Wears Prada. She also wrote one of my favorite shows of all time, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. Brilliant writer. She wanted to write a movie about her friend Kate, who had been a bridesmaid like 13 times, was just the constant people pleaser. But she envisioned it as this kind of highbrow, artistic, like women who need to learn how to be self-sufficient, who end up not needing a man. And she wanted to make a point. She just kind of had this vision for it. Well, Hollywood did what Hollywood does. And very quickly, they're like, cool, but if you want to make money and you want people to actually pick this up, you're going to have to commercialize this. So it took years, like several years, 5 or 6 years, with bringing on new writers, rewriting, slowly chipping away at what she wanted, but in a way that she was eventually okay with, like giving some concessions. I mean, she wanted Katherine Heigl's character to end up alone, to choose herself, which is very funny because that's how Crazy Ex-Girlfriend ends, is you have a woman who's been through years of will they, won't they with different guys, and she chooses herself. I can't imagine anyone ever caring at all about this movie if that had happened. But, you know, slowly, like they brought in, I can't remember their names, but two writers who ended up writing Bad Moms, they brought them in to make it more appealing to men. And even when the movie was finally getting made, you know, she went off and wrote The Devil Wears Prada. She's riding high on that. Finally, 27 Dresses back in. They're about to release the movie. They're really stuck on, like, because they truly believed no man is going to want to go see 27 Dresses. And also, what's going to set this rom-com apart from all these other movies that are pretty much telling the same story. So for me, one of the biggest things about this movie is the iconic poster. Because what do you see? What do you remember about the poster, Caroline? What's the biggest thing you remember?
Graphic design. It's Katherine Heigl in a dress.
What does the dress say, though?
Oh.
You can Google it if you want. Like, the most prominent thing on this dress is the words "from the writer of The Devil Wears Prada" in big letters.
Whoa.
And at the time, like, I mean, in general, you never see writers get like top billing, but because that movie was such a hit, they made the chic for the, you know, the early aughts poster and made that really prominent on her to pull people in, and it was effective. And so,
oh my gosh, yeah, it's the like, yeah, the bustier part of the top of the dress. Wow.
We
like,
need to put that movie on the schedule for this year. By the
we
way.
Do. It's one of the, I think it's one of the most iconic movie posters. Like, I can see my DVD case from college.
I know, that's what I was saying. I was like, you know? I can see the case. Why am I not remembering what this looks like?
I know. And so, you know, as time went on with this movie, you know, they brought in Anne Fletcher to direct, which she also directed The Proposal and was a choreographer on The Wedding Planner. So you have like a woman-led production on this in the end. And even though it was a very different movie in many ways from what Aline wanted for it, she was really, really pleased with it. And so the few bits of trivia I have, because this was a personal project for her and it was about her friend, I think, oh yeah, I already said the thing. Her friend had been in 13 weddings, which, by the way, I think, and even though like this is kind of part of, this is kind of the whole point of the movie, but isn't it wild to think like you're that important to that many different women? Just the accomplishment of being in like 13 bridal parties, that you are that person. I think it's cool.
That's incredible. And also the financial ramifications, which Marzen mentions, are, I can't even imagine.
Insane. But the one trivia point that I think all of us will agree is, would change the movie fundamentally. They almost cut Benny and the Jets. So this was one sticking point for Aline, because that was something that she and her friends, like, they never got the words right. So it was a personal thing for them. They wanted in. They said, it's too slow. We can't pace this out correctly. They thought about doing like, I think Pour Some Sugar on Me. There was like a lot of different, just more up-tempo things. She lobbied everyone on the set and people in production to get to keep that in the film. And it's one of the most iconic rom-com scenes of all time.
It's the absolute best. It's literally the
best.
That
was long-winded.
Ever.
But I wanted to walk everyone through that process, that this wasn't just some cookie cutter, go put a girl and a guy together and make it cute. Like, this was a whole passion project that took a lot of different turns and it ended up being great. No matter what Rotten Tomatoes says.
40%.
The hell with them. The hell with them. I wanted to ask both of you about the journalism aspect of this movie. Like, I wanted to start out with that because, like, we've talked, strangely, was it last Rom-Com Month we did How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days?
Yeah.
Has it already been a year? Oh, my God.
Where's my life going? Yes.
Tell me about it.
But that one, you know, it's like, She's pitching it, and if she gets this, she gets to be the whatever. She gets to write whatever
Furious
she wants
writer.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
The thing with this article, I think this would have legs if, like, you're in the commitment section. I feel like this would be something that, like, is an interesting piece.
Yeah. I think, well, I mean, the journalism aspect of it never stood out to me as, like, off or like why. So I even rewatching it now that I've like been in the industry, and I did pretty well with it, I guess. It's fine. I mean, it's terrible. It's not like, what is the Christmas Prince one? Like, it's not that bad, I guess I should say. The bar is so low for journalism and movies that, like,
and media literacy,
like,
I think.
Sure, why not? Like, what,
I mean, what. And I'm not getting on a soapbox here. I'm just going to say this one thing. I've said for years, I think it's wild, as somebody who's worked in this industry for a long time, how news outlets and news organizations and magazines, just everything you could think of, never take it upon themselves to just explain their process to people. And I realize it doesn't matter for the movie, but like this Bush League shit of him with like a cyber shot taking photos and all are great.
Yeah. That was the one. Yeah. That was the one where it's like, that's not how this works.
I was like, there's no way that this man that's not framing these photos or doing any sort of lighting is putting these on the front page of the New York Post that they say he writes for?
Yeah.
It's like the New York Journal or something.
It's supposed to be the Post. But like also just the whole setup of him like not being honest about why he's writing. Like, that's a totally unethical thing. You can't do that. Can do that. There's your job over it.
Yeah. And while I didn't work at a paper then, I work at a paper now. And her saying the commitment section is what keeps this paper afloat, like, or whatever she says, like, no.
Biggest moneymakers.
Listen, it could be the moneymaker, but her saying that it like pays for the rest of the paper, that no, that's not how that works.
Yeah, they definitely wanted to create the same mystique and appeal as the New York Times vows, you know, because that's like, oh boy. But yeah, no, very weird time to even have a movie about a newspaper. Like, at least How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days, which was made a few years earlier, was like magazine. We still put a newspaper in 2008? The hell you say?
Which is why her evil sister is like, look at you and your little cutouts of the newspaper. That's what she sounds like to me.
Like the Wicked Witch of the West?
Yes.
Okay.
It was a witch, bro.
The best video. Before we get into what worked, we're going to take a quick ad break and then we'll be back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. And before we get into what worked, I went back and looked at some old run sheets and some of the old rom-com month stuff. And we really only had one difference in those episodes that we had talked about that I completely forgotten about. After we did When Harry Met Sally, we started talking about, with rom-coms, the Met moment, the kind of the moment where the couple realizes, where one of them or both of them realize that, like, hey, we're a thing. We like each other. What is that moment in this movie?
The dress, the dresses, trying on the dresses.
Yeah. Wait, what are those?
Nothing.
Are those?
No.
Are they bridesmaid dresses?
This is none of your business.
Oh, good God. What, do you kept them all? You have a whole closet full. Why? What?
I have a lot of friends and I like to keep them.
Right. Well, that makes complete sense because they're beautiful.
Some of them are not that bad.
Not that bad? I'd like to see one of them that's not that bad.
For her. I would say for him, it's night one. He likes her from the jump. Like, he's,
oh, well, sure.
He's trying to charm from the jump. The dresses is when she realizes that he's actually, like, fun to be around. And then the obvious one is Benny and the Jets. Like, when she realizes
that's like...
he's not the, like, completely cynical, I cried like a baby at the Kellerman wedding. The moment that he says that he looks at the guy when the woman walks down the aisle, she's like, she was going to sleep with him that night.
Like, even though they both smelled like rainwater. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it's lovely.
I would agree. I was going to kick that question to you guys because I was trying to think about it beforehand. And I was like, I've only seen this once. I'm not really sure. So.
Well, her guard comes down. She's had to keep her guard up for a long time. And she has to take care of everyone and everything. And she doesn't ever get to have fun. And it's very clear from the start, like, she loves being that person for people because she, it's like a love language, you know, acts of service. But the dresses are the physical manifestation of, like, her shame about it, too. Of, like, here's proof that I have lost myself in doing for others. And the fact that, like, she can let her guard down and she's starting to trust him and have fun. I think that's a really cute moment. I'm not projecting. Why do you ask?
The amount that I project on her, like, or that's why I loved this movie. I don't know how many times in my life, this is like the saddest statement. So buckle up, friends. The amount of, like, unrequited love crushes that I have had on people over the course of my life is almost all of them. Like, so even though it's, I always do this. It's Edward Norton. No.
I do this too. Edward Burns. I do this. Eddie Burns. Not
every time I mix them up. It's
but
like
it is Edward Norton in this one. In this one, it's Norton. And Burns is in The Holiday, right? No.
And Burns is in The Holiday and Saving Private Ryan. Edward Norton is a prestige actor who, like Katherine Heigl, is rumored to be very, very difficult, but hasn't had any problems with his career.
I'm sorry. Who is in this movie?
Eddie Burns is in this movie.
Burns.
Who is also in The Holiday.
Sorry. I screwed up.
Also in Saving Private Ryan.
Okay. So Edward Burns is a walking loaf of white bread. No personality. And the same in The Holiday. I think I said the same thing in The Holiday. This man is so bland. I don't understand. But even through all of that, her entire, I just related to her so much. I wanted her entire wardrobe in 2008. Like, every single thing about Jane, I just related to, whether it was the, organizational aspect of it, the doing things for other people, always wanting to help out, the event planning type thing, being the person that thinks three steps ahead and is prepared and thinking about that stuff. And I had my best friend at the time in flight school was Judy Greer, she was the Judy Greer mirror, and so we sat there and we're like, oh my gosh, this is us, and so that's what is so funny to me about this movie. So I just relate to it on not the 27, weddings type thing. I'm actually in my first wedding this summer. Very excited about it.
Is the dress you're wearing something that would potentially get you canceled 10 years later, like a few of these themed weddings?
It's very pretty. It's very very simple, which I love. That's not in a condescending way. There's no petticoat, so that's good. There's no required accessories like umbrellas or snorkel masks, so also good.
Or a horse.
Yes. Sorry, we were going to talk about the dresses.
Yeah, I'm all ears on your opinions on the dresses, because the dress montage is one of the most fun moments of this movie. Yeah. But then we see all the interesting weddings she was in. I've never seen weddings like most of them. The underwater photo shoot, the horses. I would believe that some of those things have happened before, though.
Yeah, I mean, I think they did a great job, especially with the tropes, because it's always been very weird to me. I've been a bridesmaid 5 times, I think. If you agree to be a bridesmaid, because you can say no, you want to be there for your friend. Clearly, you mean enough to them, hopefully, in most cases, that you'll spend a few hundred on a dress. You'll spend what you have to. But I always thought it was so strange to ask someone, will you be in my wedding? Great. Now go pay for it. Go buy your, and I understand weddings are expensive. I'm not saying it's wrong or anything, but the joke is always you have to pay your own money for this dress you will never wear again. And they do say stuff you can just shorten it and wear it as a party dress.
You can shorten it, wear it again. Oh my God. So true.
All of my dresses are hanging up in my childhood bedroom right now. There was one dress, she might be listening to the podcast, but this marriage ended and she's in a happier one, so hopefully she won't kill me for saying this. One dress was brown. It was a brown bridesmaid's dress with a pink sash. I was like, where am I gonna wear this? Chocolate Factory.
Baskin Robbins.
I didn't say that on the wedding day, but I mean, they're just, but it's about the bride. It's about what she wants. And yeah, you're happy to serve. You're there to help her through a day. So if that means wearing an ugly dress, then that's what you do.
The LA one was so funny.
Yeah.
And again, very much related to the photo shoot where she was squatting so that she didn't look like a giant next to everybody else. And then so I had 3 friends in flight school that were each 5 foot, 5'1", 5 foot.
Can't relate.
Yeah. I think one was 4'11". I swear to God, I went to the movies with the three of them. I felt like I was the mom, I felt like I needed to be girls, do you want anything? Any snacks? It was just so, and they were so, it was just hilarious. They were all, two navigators and a pilot. One of them ended up being a helicopter pilot. But anyway, so that one also I related to on a personal level, where she's like, ooh, let me stretch my knees out, stand back. Oh my God.
Well, Caroline, I want to keep it with you with what worked about this one. Why is this a Hall of Fame rom-com for you?
I think what I really enjoy is the actual levels to the contention, the issue throughout the, what Alex just said the right word for it, the hang up, the problem, the
the conflict.
Yeah, I was like, what is this? I'm a writer, folks. Great at it. The conflict.
It's late.
Because like we've talked about the, what was it? You've Got Mail and How to Lose a Guy in 10 Days. Even what we just did, the 10 Things I Hate About You. The deception is much more aggressive in some other rom-coms, I think. And like, yes, I understand that like he introduced himself as Kevin and he's actually Malcolm, but there was no real reason that he needed to tell her his like writing name at the first wedding. Like, he gave her his real name. He was there working, but he does that to protect himself from, like, you know, it's a whatever. It's a why are words so hard right now? It's not a stage name, but you know what I mean? Pen name. Golly.
Nom de plume.
Yes. So I get like why he doesn't need to like say that right off the bat. And then he doesn't know when he gets the, like, when he's going to write about Satan's wedding, that it's her sister. So it's not like
she tried to, like, sucks so bad. I've just been waiting. The worst. She is terrible. It's one of the things that works about this movie.
Oh, one of the movie villains of all time. Like, she sucks. But I think that the actual conflict is much more, like, I thought, natural and worked in, because she would be annoyed by that, but he didn't necessarily do anything particularly deceptive on purpose to her. He just didn't tell her his pen name. Like, that's essentially what it comes down to. And then the other conflict is that her awful sister is so selfish and terrible that she just is oblivious to everything around her. And she works for, again, when we talk about oblivious, one of the most oblivious men alive, who just, I swear to you, the stuff I'm telling, the like way that I relate to this movie, when the guy's just like, that's what I love about you. You're just always there for me. And you're just like, shut up. Do you not understand that I'm like madly in love with you? You idiot. Stop saying these things. This is like putting my delusion back. Like, oh gosh, it just
can't relate.
Drives me nuts.
I mean, the thing about it is you're supposed to believe that because she's lying to him about who she is, that he's like head over heels for her. And didn't he say he went to fucking Harvard? And yeah. They like,
and he dropped out. And,
yeah, because of, but because she's lying to him, he's into her. And it doesn't matter how many lies she makes up about herself, she still would not be able to engage him on the kind of level that she is if he wasn't overlooking a bunch of other things just because she was really hot. Like, that's the name of the game. She's able to get away with these lies because she is Malin Ackerman and she looks like a model. And he is not entirely complicit. Like, yes, he was lied to. He was deceived, hoodwinked, bamboozled, but he is somewhat complicit in
he's an idiot.
In getting married to, yes, yes. In
he's
getting
an
married
idiot.
To Satan.
He's
but she
a
is
mayonnaise
horrible.
Sandwich.
He is. Oh my God. He drives me nuts. And like, oh man, he is going to struggle so aggressively to replace her in that position, by the way. Like,
oh yeah, no chance.
I have some thoughts on Tess I would like to share.
Yes.
Okay. It's not that I disagree with anything you're saying. I'm just saying I want to present a different perspective. Not that it'll change your mind. Caroline and I are both, so when we talk about like sister dynamics, typically more often than not, you see more conversations about three or more sisters. You got your oldest and your middle and your youngest. Caroline and I are both in families where it's me and another sister, right? And we, yeah. You know, and I know your dynamic is different with yours and mine's different. It's not a stereotype. But here's what I'll say. Like, my sister and I are 9 years apart. So when she came along, I was like already mom's little helper. I was helping change. I was helping play. I was always the bigger sister. You know, I went to college when she was in like third grade. And so when you have that personality type of the people pleaser, of the I can be just like mom, I will take care of you, you never have to worry, you put yourself in that position, and depending on the household dynamic, and especially you have a dead parent involved here too, they lost their mother, and then as I found, even though my sister and I are both grown, you go into super mom mode of I am going to take care of everything and you just chill. I think there could be potential for enabling them to say, okay, well, they've got it. Because the younger sibling is never put in the position of having to be the one to handle it. And the older people pleaser is just like, I have this, you know? I'm not saying that excuses her being an asshole, because she's a total asshole during most of this and like cutting up the wedding dress. It's just, it's very clear she's never had consequences for her actions.
Ever.
Like that's a good point. Like watching the dad interact with her, I'm like, buddy, you missed a chance to deliver some lessons over the course of this young woman's life, because he sees no fault in her. He's like, you guys need to figure it out. It's like, she just cut up your wife's wedding dress, and she cut a small, to use a small part of it. She's lying to this man. It's an interesting dynamic. Your sister is marrying the love of your life, and they could have gone like, oh, maybe they work out. She's not that bad. She's just not like in love with him like you are, or something like that. But it's like, no, she's actually the devil. She's actually a legitimately bad person. She is a person who doesn't care about anyone but herself.
The entire, like the part of the wedding dress scene that gets all the attention is the like, oh, you wouldn't hurt a fly, and you definitely wouldn't hurt me. I'm your sister. She's like, that was yesterday. Today, you're just the bitch that cut up my mom's wedding dress. Which every time I'm like, let's go, like ready to run through a wall. But the entire sequence of that scene is, it starts with her arriving, and the first thing that Tess is saying to her is like, I've decided that I will forgive you, as if she did anything wrong in the entire article coming out process, and then crosses her off the list as a to-do item. So not only showing no empathy or asking her sister how she's doing based on the fact that she just had all of these pictures of her in a vulnerable like moment thrown all over the front page of the huge paper in New York. So yeah, none of that, no sympathy, no empathy, any of that. And then she goes into the whole like, oh, the silhouette was old. She's already stolen the entire wedding that she didn't even really give a shit about. She didn't, like, cuts up the dress. And then when she's called on it and sees that her older sister, who has cared for her like her entire life, is devastated at this, she then goes like, what would you know about relationships? Excuse me? Like, oh, all those successful relationships you've had? Listen, bitch, now we're going to like throw hands. And then makes like a size joke at her, like at the end, where she's like, it wouldn't fit you anyway. Oh, I can't.
Very early 2000s,
look at Jessica Simpson. Ooh.
I think it's made clear throughout all of this that when their mother died, it was a combination of Jane stepping up and saying, kind of, this is what I was made for, I will be the organizer, I will be the mom. And the dad was so distraught and in grief. Yeah. And like, and that's like the older sister trope. There's this, I follow a few different Instagram accounts that are just oldest sister memes. And it's like, yeah, I'm an oldest sister because something, something I was dependent on to be the parent, blah, blah, blah. I think it's very clear by that point in the movie that Tess sees Jane as another mom, because it's like, why wouldn't you just sacrifice everything for me? Like, why should I even have to ask you if I can cut up things that mean something to you? Because don't you live for me? And don't you serve me? Aren't I the point of you? Yeah, well, it's rough.
There's the like kind of throwaway comment, but when Kevin goes over to interview her the first time, and she says all the stuff like, I taught her this, I taught her that, like, I basically raised her. And then she goes, oh, please don't put that in. That would like absolutely destroy my dad. Like, I don't mean, and it's such a telling small like short moment that is like so much about their relationship. But it's like, you can tell she never had to really commit to anything. She flits around with the boyfriends and can get
with
guys
Euro trash.
He's not one of your Euro trash boyfriends. He's a good person.
What a 2008 thing to say, by the way. Euro trash.
Oh yeah, 100%.
I want to bring that. We need to bring that back. You guys are so good at analyzing characters and motivations and really diving into the personality. And I'm just over here like, oh, fuck her. She sucks.
She does suck.
Well, I just think like sisters are such a delicate balance. And like Caroline and I have talked a lot about our sisters and the relationships we have with them. And our sisters are not Tess's, by the way.
No, not at all.
All I mean by bringing up the two sister dynamic is, you very rarely do you see like two sisters who are just like mostly similar. Like usually they'll have interests or something that'll just make them vastly different. And I think that plays into it. But I also think like with parental loss too, there's always, there's just personality types. When you are the first to come along, you're the one that has to set the bar. And then the second gets forgiven for all the shit that you didn't get forgiven for.
I'm the baby, so this is why it's extra funny to me. Because like Alex has had to deal with the older sister bullshit, and I'm like the baby that came along. My sister called me baby for like the first like 2 years of my life. She taught me how to read.
Yeah. Like I told Mary the other day, my younger sister's finishing up college. She's about to start grad school. And I was like, hey, listen to me. Never touch your 401k. I don't care how broke you are. You call me. I will give you money. She's like, I don't even think I know what that is. I'm like, yeah, you got it. As long as you don't touch it, you're fine.
As long as you don't touch it. Yeah, because you get penalties before you're 65, folks.
And that's what I was like, look, my only role as the older sister was to have made all the mistakes that you can learn from. And if you don't learn from them, what is the point of me?
And if you haven't started your 401k yet, folks, put money in, because the money you put now, even if you put less in now, then more later. Anyway, my mom blah, was a blah.
And yeah, like Mike Golick Sr. says, change your air filter every month.
Dude, that's one that I really need Mike to text me when he changes his, and I need to order. Anyway,
he needs to alert the group text.
My older sister Megan is the absolute best, and I was four. She would bring home her paper, her like workbooks from kindergarten, and erase all of it, and then reteach me when she got home. And so I was like four and a half, and I was reading because my mom was like, "Wait, did she just?" Wait, what just happened? And then she like quizzed me on words and Megan taught me.
Which is tough, because then your parents weren't able to spell in front of you to talk about things that they didn't want to hear. That's a huge asset when you have your kids.
Well, now Megan's like, oh, don't never forget, you're only where you are because I taught you how to read.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, fair point.
Getting back on the train of what worked. This couple and their chemistry,
yes.
Heigl and Marsden. I was thinking about it in terms, because I'm a normal person, in terms of, you know, the carnival game where you take a big mallet and you hit it and it's like how high you get to the top thing. If you're thinking about rom-com couples having to get to the peak of, this is a 100% believable. We think they would make it. We think they would make it long-term. We don't really see like that many warts, because there are certain things like, we talk about how to lose a guy in 10 days. Like, we don't really see them be themselves except for this kind of one scene. This couple, if we're seeing them, you know, how many barriers they get through and how much it seems like they are a couple and they have good chemistry. Heigl and Marsden I see very few like kinks in that rope. Like, it seems like this would work. They seem close to made for each other.
I buy it. I buy it. They crackle, and it's the perfect amount of, again, she gets on him for being cynical right early on, mm-hmm. but she, I think, like in the first scenes and stuff, she's not out there like moon-eyed trying to find a boyfriend. Like, she's almost as cynical, but just in a very, very different way. And so, but I also loved her no bullshit. Like, where when she meets him, and she's not just going to be like won over by him being charming and like walking her to the door with the flowers. Cause I love that she's like, it was interesting to meet you. Like, it wasn't great. Like, and it wasn't said in like a flirty way. It was literally like interesting. Look how refreshing, a man who doesn't believe in marriage. Like, but he's right there with the quips. She's like, oh, so you admit it's like marriage is like a child believing in Santa. And so they just have such great chemistry and like on-screen presence, and again, I think because the story coming out is like the real betrayal, but she's great. He just absolutely does it for me in this movie.
Mm-hmm.
even with the outfits.
can we talk about what didn't work in this one?
When Kyle texted, we did like I latch onto his life so that I'm like, oh, you guys are watching the movie? Like, let me watch it with you. we were texting. So Jacqueline and Kyle and I have a group text, and we were texting last night watching it. And he's like, Marsden is a 10 until you zoom out and you see the full outfit. It's like a 3.5.
the jeans and the shoes he's wearing. Jacqueline pointed this out, that he's wearing like the New Balance dad sneakers where yes. the toe points up.
Yes.
And the jeans are so ill-fitting.
And like, it's like 2008.
But here's the thing, Alex, when did you live in New York?
2011 to 2012.
So not that far away. This man was working. He was in journalism. It wasn't like he was I don't want to disparage. It wasn't like he was a construction worker. Like, he should have had some sense.
It wasn't like he was a sports journalist. Like, I mean, he was dressed like he was on like the baseball beat. No offense. Like,
Caroline, I texted you this last night. This is the new, like, you see someone and you're like, that person looks like a cop. If you go to a wedding, the worst looking person, the worst dressed person at the wedding, it's like, oh, that's the wedding reporter. That guy right there.
Yeah. So, and you've reminded me of something too. So I think like any newspaper in general, you certainly have people who will dress like business casual, like what they would, you know, like a suit and stuff. It's a newspaper. The culture in general, even though he's the weddings guy, so it's not the same thing, but the culture is like whatever you can run around, move around in. Like, if you've got to rush to a story, you don't want to be in heels and a skirt, and you don't want to be in like slacks and a jacket. You're not a broadcast journalist. So that casual level of the clothes did stand out as much as just they were just terrible clothes. But I know I've told this story a million times on this podcast before. I had to cover weddings for a little bit when I lived in Alabama. And
you have not told this story on this podcast because I haven't heard this.
I swear. Okay. Well, if I haven't, but I'm sure I feel like I have, and I'm willing to bet there's at least one like dedicated listener out there who will remember this story, or maybe I've tweeted about it. So when I started at AL.com, I know I've told this part of my AL.com journey. I didn't have a beat when I got there. So I was kind of just trying to do really creative stuff to get noticed, which is just, you know, you're fighting everybody for stories. And my editor came to me and was like, we want to start covering weddings, but we want to be creative with it. We don't want to just do like commitments. We want to, and this is very forward thinking for a Southern regional newspaper at the time. We want to highlight the vendors. We want to talk about who made the dress. We do want to get to the root of their story, but we also want to talk about the event and breaking down the event. And I was like, yeah, of course I would love to do that. I did not want to do that at all. And one of the things that I struggled with was not knowing what to wear, because typically on assignment, I was in jeans, or like at the most, maybe like a blazer and jeans. Like, I'm not going to wear jeans to a wedding, but I also don't want to look like a guest. Like, I want to be able to kind of blend in. And this one wedding, and I had just moved to Alabama, you have to remember this. I wore, it was August, maybe. August or September, I was very broke. I had a baby at the time. Like, I had no money. All the money was for diapers. I got this like discount clearance black and white dress that had a nice silhouette. Like, it looked like a work dress. And it just had like a black and white pattern on it. Some might call it houndstooth. I don't know. This was the most Auburn wedding of all Auburn weddings.
Oh, no.
The colors were orange and blue. They had the Auburn band there playing the song, and I showed up to their wedding in houndstooth and was the most hated person there. Now, a few months later, I'm covering another wedding, totally unrelated. It was a really cool wedding that happened at the Alabama Theater, because the bride and groom, I believe they were theater people, but it's been a while. So part of it was I would go talk to the caterers. So everybody's at the reception dancing, having a time, while I go back to the kitchen. And they ask me, like, so do you cover weddings full time? I'm telling them the story I just told all of you. And I told that story, and one of the catering staff goes, oh my God, I heard about you. Someone told, like, I had a reputation among wedding caterers in Alabama for being the girl who showed up to the Auburn wedding in a houndstooth dress.
That's amazing.
I can't believe I've never heard the story before, because I haven't.
I swear I've told it here,
I've
but I guess not.
I've never heard that. Oh yeah. My God. That's incredible.
So it is tough to know what to wear.
I can
that
imagine.
Was my point.
Well, for guys, here's the thing. I won't let guys off the hook that easy. For women, you're like, what do I, I'm not going to, I don't want to wear like a gown if I'm at this formal event, but I can't be in jeans and like whatever. And so he just, it was the commitment to the gray undershirt that killed me. Like,
he was ready for any scenario because he had multiple layers at all times.
He had three layers on top at all times.
The undershirt was essential in those two things. Like the loose button down, the undershirt, like either the white tee or the gray. Yeah, it was essential.
He had the like green army jacket that he wore a lot over as like the third layer. Yeah. Or sometimes he'd bust out the like V-neck sweater over the other two layers. They did him no favors in the styling. And again, you're right. It's 2008. Like, but if they tailored those jeans even slightly and put him in just like casual boots, totally different look for my guy. Like, anyway,
it's amazing what God-given good looks do to someone, though, because he was dressed like Steve Carell in the beginning of Crazy Stupid Love. And he's still like, wow, that's one of the most handsome people of all time right there.
Yeah.
What is the meme with them where it's like Carell and Ryan Gosling and it's like the defensive coordinator and the offensive coordinator? Oh, I love that.
That's the Oppenheimer one when he's dressed. It's Oppenheimer and it's Einstein and then it's him as Ken and it's like the head coach, defensive coordinator, offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
I have one thing that really didn't work about this one.
Hit us with it.
She lost her planner and did not notice. And this is someone who obsessively uses her planner. She'd be in full-blown panic mode that morning.
Well, she was. She was in panic mode at the office. Like, she got to her office and was like, how is it not here? I can see that if you're doing all of those things, you're moving around so much that she thinks, one, I lost it somewhere in the shuffle back and forth between the two weddings. Two, I left it at work and I'm just like forgetting that I like brought it with me. Like I can buy that. My question is how, I know it's not feasible at all. And I love that this is just like a little fun thing they do, but I don't know my New York geography enough to know how far apart the two weddings were. So like one's clearly in Brooklyn, by the Brooklyn Bridge, the Indian wedding was there. How, like realistically, that would be a nightmare of a night.
Where was the other wedding? So I never paid attention to where it was.
I don't know. That's the thing. Is like I have
no clue. Oh, that's the thing too. Is she is? I mean, I don't want to say she's not having a good time because I think at this point in her life, she kind of thrived off getting the job done and being there for these people. But what a horrible, terrible night of not getting to enjoy any of these weddings. Like she's in there. She comes back to the wedding. From the Indian wedding and she's like dancing and stuff like that. But it's like, she's dancing because it's time to dance, not like dancing because it's the joy of dancing. It's like, okay, I got to hit this point, this play in the playbook right now. And then I got to go do this. I got to help both of them while they pee. But like, I guess that's what she's thriving off. Mm-hmm. But in general, that night sounds terrible. It's a wonderful, if we're segueing into best scene though, that's a wonderful introduction to this movie. Like this movie gets it. It's a really wonderful opening scene.
It's so smart. And again, I relate to her because she's clearly the person that thrives off of when everything, if you've ever done event planning or like doing event planning, when everything goes perfectly, no one should know you were ever there. And it is the best feeling in the entire world to me. I thrive off of it. I used to, when I worked at the Pentagon for DIA, I worked with the foreign liaisons in the foreign liaison office.
Were you part of the group that made Taylor Swift a secret operative to push the Joe Biden's election?
Definitely not. No, definitely not. I'm telling you, I'm furious that I was there for 3 years and we did not overlap once at the Popeyes and the food court at the Pentagon.
Incredible.
But like doing stuff like getting people parking passes and like showing what time they should show up and meeting them at the door and walking them flawlessly to the first thing when you spent weeks setting everything up and getting it perfect. Oh, it's like such a high. Like I'm such a dork, but like it is the best feeling in the world. So I was like, yes, I get this. This right off the bat, I was like, I'm gonna get this person. Yeah, it's an excellent opening scene. I mean, I don't want to jump the gun, but the Benny and the Jet scene is the best scene in the movie.
Great song.
Another song. Hey, kids. Shake, lose a limb on the mountain. The one that's ain't gonna make a feather.
Those are exactly the words. Sorry, lyric police, what are the words?
You're gonna hairy hands and music so the walrus sounds.
Walrus sounds?
Take pennies and loans.
just so blazed down. Benny and Jess.
I was going to say, is there an argument for any other scene but that scene?
I actually think that the end scene is great. Not the not their wedding, but like her.
The boat?
Yes, the boat is fantastic. Him saying, like, come over here.
Come over
like,
here.
Jesus Christ.
Oy vey.
The bride is great.
She's fantastic.
Oh, yeah. She's wonderful.
It is just, it is like a, like, animal reaction when he says that. Just, I'm like, ugh. Every time.
It what the girlies would call feral.
Yes.
Like
yes. It's
we
literally
call again, it that in 2008.
No, it's and this wasn't a reference then because it hadn't come out yet. But again, it's not to mention Fleabag twice in the same episode. It's Neil. Like it's like so it gets the like you're like oh, oh.
It appeals to the most primal of your urges. And you're like, this is a sweet ass movie. But also I am a warm-blooded woman.
Like, it's the reverse the reverse Musburger.
But hold, can we talk about the Benny and the Jets scene though? Like give it
the
a
floor
stick.
Is floor is yours.
It is I'm so glad you shared all that info, Alex, because it is hands down the perfect song to do this with. And it's partly because it has the lead up, it has the piano, like, and it takes you, I just think every single thing about that scene is so organic, like in a sense that like you could see yourself stuck somewhere, you're at a dive bar, everything's going to shit, and you're like, let's just like, we're just having a drink, just one drink, and it turns into shots, and you're like getting to know each other, even though you've had like these contentious moments, like all this stuff. How many times have you been in a bar talking to someone, blah, 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 you hear a song start and you're like, yes, God, great song. And it just takes over the conversation. Like it is a thing that happens. I love that. Mm-hmm. And it actually, my friend, again, Andrea, my friend that was also obsessed with this movie. We then made it our mission to like memorize every word of Benny and the Jets because we realized
the real words or the words they say.
The real words. When he says boobs, she's got electric boobs. Boobs. It's just the funniest, most like charming, cute. And then it adds in when he helps her off the bar, again, it's the like feral thing where it's just like it goes from this playful, flirty to just now you're like, oh, he's so like strong and helpful. Like it's the dumbest. It reverts you back to like the most like animal instincts. It's the flexing of the hand from Pride and Prejudice. Like, oh my God, I don't even know like the demographics of our listeners. I know like from there's probably like so many of our like the normal guys listening that are like, what is this crazy woman talking about?
Hey, it's rom-com month though.
It's rom-com month. It's just a perfect scene. It's perfect.
It's real good.
Yes, I agree with everything Caroline just said. I think it's wonderful. And I think like, I don't know. I mean, I think it's well established based on everything about me that I love a good bar. And there's just
this we know.
I almost, you almost had a spit take on video for this.
So relate. I'm sorry I have so many asides, but I was just talking about this. Like, a funny thing about how I met the guy I'm dating is 7 years ago, someone asked him on Twitter. I did not know who he was at all. Someone asked him, what was the worst first date you ever had? He said, a gal from Mississippi went shot for shot with me, and for some reason I agreed. And like three people instantly replied, you dated Alex McDaniel. So my reputation for, yes. And that, and then he followed me. He followed me and I followed him. And 6 years later.
A simple 6 years later.
Going shot for shot every night.
Very quick, no drama 6 years later.
Very smooth.
But like my reputation precedes me, but like I just love it. And they're drinking scotch. You don't need to be like shooting scotch. It was just, it's a nice little messy life moment. And I think that song and the scene just captures it really well. So I agree.
It is the best scene. I do want to give a shout out to the picture slideshow, which I know that Judy Greer tells her after the fact. The quote, if it was the right thing to do, you'd feel better right now. But I also, while watching the scene, wrote, fuck yes, Jane, drag her. So that's just kind of how I was feeling at the time. But
fair.
It's Benny and the Jets, though.
Well, and I actually think probably second is the dress montage.
Yes. Yeah. Also very good. What's the best quote in this movie?
This is not the best quote, but it makes me laugh every time. And I've said it a billion times since I saw it. But when Kevin shows up, she realizes that the flowers are from him, not white bread loaf man boss. And he's now talking to her sister, and she knows that this is already trouble. And she goes outside and screams. And like, again, that's like, so it's one of the concessions you have to make. Like, are you telling me she didn't notice that there's a whole party to her left? And are you telling me that this 50-year anniversary is having their party next to this club that's like, like the whole time? Like, no, but I don't care because it's perfect. But when she stops and goes like, 50, wow. We laugh every single time.
Her delivery is so much of what makes her so good. 50, wow. She's so like dorky and fun. Yes. I love, and I know there was a lot of improv between the two of them. I don't know, obviously, like which lines were which, but the one that's always stuck with me and that I feel like I use it all the time is when he says to her, what about you? You don't have any needs? No, I'm Jesus.
No, I'm Jesus.
That's such a 2008 ass joke, by the way.
Good. It's so good. I also really love his, like, I love his confidence where he's like, one, he writes his name in the date book for every Saturday night. That would honestly, no jury would convict me of the crime I would commit if someone defaced my planner like that, because I am like, if I have to cross something out, I'm like, well, I gotta get a new one. Like, I am so anal retentive about like how I have my calendar. Like, I have color coded like this whole thing. But when he says, how about a new date book or just a date? Like, yes. 10 out of 10. No notes. Mm-hmm. But Judy Greer has about 1,000 outstanding one-liners, including like when you first meet her and she's like, what? The bitch said up. It's up. About her so hair. Good. Everything she says in the yoga session where she's like, that whore, like whatever, was she asked her to be at the wedding. But I also really like when the boss is like, well, is there any chance she thinks the gift is from me? She's like, well, I wrapped it like a truck ran it over.
It's so good.
On the Judy Greer subject, is this the easiest Lenny Harris pinch hitter award for best supporting character?
In the history of the Lenny Harris pinch hitter award, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any competition. This isn't a movie with a ton of characters.
No.
In general. It's very, it's kept very close to the vest. And most everyone, we've got our leads and then a couple supporting ones. But yeah, it's Judy Greer pretty easily, or Pedro.
It's Judy Greer, like by a landslide. Yeah. She's... maybe there's a nice Kristen Ritter appearance in this movie too.
There is a Kristen Ritter appearance in this movie. This is right. Is this when Breaking Bad started? Maybe before Breaking Bad?
It was around that time, I think. I didn't watch Breaking Bad until I started it 3 weeks before my child was born, and I finished it like 2 days before.
It's funny that means you and I were watching Breaking Bad right around the same time.
Were you like, because we were trying to get to the finale. When the finale was.
Did a full season in the hospital. Yeah.
Our kids are.
I've never seen a single episode. My dad always tells me I need to watch it.
You would enjoy it.
I didn't.
Too stressful. If she won't watch The Bear, she's not watching Breaking Bad.
Well, here's the thing. I watch stressful stuff all the time. I listen to the Dateline podcast.
Like, you literally fly planes, Caroline, and you're like, too much. The anxiety gets
the
me.
The bear being too much is still kind of driving me crazy. You got to watch
Jury Duty.
You have no argument for not watching Jury Duty like tonight, depending on when we end this.
I told you I've been trying to catch up in the 90 Day Fiancé cinematic universe. And once you get kind of stuck in a season, you can't get out because these people make horrible decisions, and it's fascinating.
What I don't get, you're a woman sorry, here's another aside. Like 14 degrees. You are equipped. You are a fucking aviator who's equipped to defend our country against enemies.
Foreign and domestic.
You foster 50 dogs at a time. You walk 30 a day. And you're like, oh, they're worried about beef sandwiches. What if they don't get the sandwiches? I'm just messing with Caroline. For anybody listening who doesn't know, like, this is me just telling her she's a badass. I'm not actually. It's just very cute. You're like, I don't know. It's a little too stressful.
Just at some point, you're going to have to get through it because you're going to have to watch the Forks episode of season two. Like, it just has,
it just has to happen.
Let's take one more quick ad break and then we'll be back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Okay, we're back. The defend the villain category, I think. Ooh. So here's the thing. Alex Carney dove into the psyche of Tess.
I wasn't like defending her. I just wanted to say, like, let's really crack this open and look at what we're dealing with here. I don't think she's malicious.
That's the basis of the defense, though, because you're right. She has been, whether intentionally or not, enabled her entire life. And I do believe, like, what's the whole conversation they have at the, like, hardware store, his store, where, by the way, she tries to spray, like, bug spray in her sister's face. I'm pretty sure that would have been very bad.
Yeah.
Very bad. But where she's talking about, like, I'm such a sap for, like, one of those moments, too, where it's like, I always just wanted to be you. You know, like, it's like, you always have things together, and you're also... But she is.
That's also a cop out. Like, that's her just trying to get away with things. I will offer no defense. The defense rests in this situation.
Every time they really, I think you could have almost forgiven so much of it outside of like the Pedro stuff when she meets Pedro and is like, "Hola, Pedro."
Exactly.
And it's like having him anytime that you have to be like, this is our secret. Don't tell, like, that's not good.
That's not, so not what she wants.
That's really where it crosses over into like, girl, I tried. But all the other stuff I could be like, oh, I'm so desperate to find love. Like, you know, I'm going to change myself or tell a few white lies, like whatever. But no, the rest of that's just pure evil.
Bad person.
Yeah.
The Peter Gallagher Award for the hottest person in this movie. Was anyone in this movie hot?
Easiest pick in the entire world. I texted Gallus. I was like, and Jacqueline last night, I was like, this is the, like, pinch hitter Peter Gallagher. Like, sorry, this is, it's James Marsden. Like, yeah. He is so good looking. When they, thank God for that follow spot. They just illuminate his eyes and it, like, I don't know if they put highlighter, like, on his cheekbones, but good Lord. He does that thing too where he, like, clenches his jaw.
Is this what you guys think of when you think of James Marsden? Like, is this this it for you guys?
For me, I
would say this is the main one. The Notebook is a close second, just because I think that was the first time I was super aware of his existence. I'm like, okay, I'm into that.
He's really great. And what is it called, Enchanted? What is the one with
he's very good in Enchanted. But like, if y'all haven't, which I know y'all, but Jury Duty,
he's
incredible.
I watched it after the Emmys, and after that, I was like, man, I really wish he would have won the Emmy because he is phenomenal.
And he's the perfect pick for something like that. This is,
yes,
I think what's happened is Jury Duty has fallen into the category for me where I look so forward to things or like get really excited about what, and I know that when I watch it, it'll be done. And so like in the back of my head, I like have this James Marsden like fun show to watch. So like when I watch it, I'll be sad that it's over.
The thing I'll tell you is there's so much post jury duty content, all the making of pieces and interviews with the cast. And there's so much to consume that does soften the blow. So that's where
I think that he's perfect for that, a show like that, because it's the mix in what makes someone a good rom-com star. It's the charming, good looking, but not so much that you're like, you'd believe that he kind of just looks like a movie star. You know what I mean? Like if you're sitting next to him, like you're not going to then think that you're in some show being tricked, like whatever. And because we're legally required to talk about Glenn Powell on each episode, they're, for anyone but you, there are people talking about exactly what you said before, where it's like, oh, no one will believe it if they're too hot type thing. But it's also the like charming, what was it for the Emmys thing where what was the guy, Justin, what's his name, that they posted the picture and they're like, Glenn Powell arrives on the red carpet for the
Emmys. The guy who looks like it. Hartley. Yeah.
Justin Hartley. And that's kind of like the same thing where you're like, it's a really nice looking guy that they look kind of, that's kind of the same charisma James Marsden. I don't know if that makes any sense, but we got our Glenn Powell mention in, so we're good.
We did. Play the music. Best time, worst time.
Worst time's got to be Tess, right?
Like in the end or over the course of the movie? I mean, I think she's having the best time most of the time.
Really until the end when she has to try to redeem herself. But yeah, I think she's kind of living it. She seems like she's living her best life all the time.
She's perpetually taken care of.
Yes.
That's true. That's a very good point. I think best time might be Judy Greer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Firing on all cylinders. Has a 2-day, one night stand after the first wedding. Shows up in the same clothes from 2 nights prior.
Oh, a legend. She's just the best, like, comedic relief support system. She goes to all these she's in so many of these weddings too, by the way. Is the perfect, like, she's a great friend. The scene, her facial expressions, like, that's what I'm saying, she maximizes every second that she is on screen, without the eye rolls, the head, just the head motions. The scene where she's in the rocker wedding and like they kiss and do like the I love you thing the first time, the face that Judy Greer makes when she like sees Katherine Heigl being upset about it and then like looks over and is like, ugh, it's the best. I think she has the best time.
I think Ed Burns has the worst time. He probably puts down quite a few deposits he can't get back for a wedding that does not happen. Gets duped. Loses his very valuable assistant
after kissing her the day after he was engaged to her sister.
Yes. Cool. Yes.
And being told that the kiss was crap.
Hilarious.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that.
I need to say it before the pod ends. When they're at Pedro's baseball game and he and Tess go down onto the field pregame to shag some flies, not how this works. That's not how this works. You cannot go down on the field before the game. I'm once again standing in front of movies asking them to ask one person how sports works.
Kyle's volunteering to be your little league consultant for any and all pictures.
My dream job is just being a sports consultant on sports movies and just saying, that's not how this works. Nope, that's not how this works. Nope, that line, you got to change it. It's not how this works. Yes. Okay. The Keith Morrison Dateline episode from this movie.
Oh, that's me. Okay.
No, Alex, do you want to riff?
No. Not my area.
This one's hard because, like, I don't want to put a crime into this movie. but this is clearly going to be about Tess. She had come back to town and everyone thought she was just visiting for a while. But was she trying to escape a dark past? Were there debts that she couldn't pay in her butt? What was she going to do? Who was she, really? Did anyone truly know Tess? The stories she told got her a man, a wedding, but would it last? Was she really a vegan? Did she have a dog? Would something worse happen to her because she's a horrible person? Tonight on Dateline.
I'm sorry that I wrecked these with my crazy witch laughter, but it's like the listeners really do miss out because watching your face when you say this stuff kills me.
The best.
This is the second time I've just absolutely stomped all over your shit by laughing, but
it's the best. Just...
I have to do the face or I can't do the seriousness of the voice.
No, it's just, it's incredible.
Roster moves. Who would you replace with Air Bud?
I was gonna say George. He's basically it. Like when people say that someone's like a golden retriever boyfriend or whatever, this is like this would be the version where it's said in a negative way.
Yeah, you know, like a super dumb golden retriever. It would be funny for Air Bud to be running this company. Air Bud dropped out of college.
Air Bud would be such an improvement over this boring man. Like, I can't explain to you how boring this man is. Like, oh.
We need to point out that there is a dog in this movie named Gatsby.
I was
going to
say there's a dog as well.
Yes, of course his name
the
is
on, the only book George has ever read, The Great Gatsby, his sophomore year of high school.
What if Judy Greer was Air Bud? Just talk shit the whole movie.
that's a good. That's the thing. There's not really many. What if? No, got it. What if Air Bud is the cab driver from the first scene? Who's taking her back and
Diggy?
Forth? And she tells him not to look in the rearview mirror, and Air Bud just like looking up in the rear.
Perfect.
The Big Chill. Rom coms can have chill moments. Would you say Benny and the Jets is a chill moment?
I almost think it's the boat scene.
Once the light comes on?
Once he's, get over here. Or Benny and the Jets. Both work for me. I would not correct someone for saying either of those two.
I would agree.
It would be lifting her off the bar in the Benny and the Jets scene, mm-hmm. I think.
Because
the crying of the Kellerman's wedding thing is like really cheesy, but because everything up until that moment works so perfectly, you're like, love it, no notes. But that's not the big chill moment. You're not like, oh my god, and then he said he cried. Like, that's not the thing that gets you. It's the whole before he gives her moment on the bar and then like helps her down. It's lovely,
him being the strong man.
Mm-hmm.
strong man on the bar. Last category, before, more, or store, prequel, sequel, or remake. I want to ask this with each of these rom-coms. It's when this came out 16 years ago. Is this couple still together?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
This one's an easy yes. Like,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. What does a sequel look like? What is Tess doing?
Still making those stupid hands. I guarantee those handbags are hideous.
You know, it's always been like a little quirk about this movie that I don't like. And I don't mean to just hate on Malin Ackerman, but she's from Australia, right? She's Australian.
Is she?
Sounds right.
I believe it.
Someone check that really quickly before I say what I'm going to say, or else I'm just being mean.
Swedish.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
Oh my gosh,
what is
Swedish? She's a Swedish and American actress. She was born in Stockholm.
Okay, why did I think she was? Well, the way she says handbags drives me nuts. Handbags. That's how she says it. Handbags. I make these
deeply
beautiful
fabulous handbags.
I know, these deeply fabulous handbags. Like, what? And look, I'm not clowning on the way people talk. I'm just saying, like, clearly she's trying to do some accent work and trying to sound, but she can't.
Her parents' names are Pia and Magnus, and that's the cutest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
She has a very important role in Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle.
And she's in Paul Rudd's funniest role ever in Wanderlust. Is that what it's called? Wanderlust? Whatever.
How about that?
Whatever. Well,
that's the Ackerman minute to end this pod.
It's Boys in Dresses is an underrated rom-com. It does not get its due. I'm still mad that it has 40% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's still
agree.
Funny. It holds up. There aren't really... I don't think there's a single joke that like is, you know, not good now. You can't say that now. I love it. it's still, I watched it 2 nights ago with you and I watched it again, or last night with you and tonight again before recording. And I'll probably, now that I know that's on Hulu, it's probably going to like bump up in the rotation a lot more frequently because it's just a ton of fun.
This one is good. I'm glad I watched it. I think this was a worthy addition to 2024 rom-com month. Guys, you are the best. Where, Caroline, where can the folks follow you?
You can find me on Twitter at CW Darnie or Instagram, same place. You can find all of the pop culture content at For the Win. And you can find us on For the Water Cooler each week, Wednesday, new episodes drop where we talk about pop culture with some fun guests. So if you want Masters of the Air updates, check us out, because every week I think we're going to do a Masters of the Air minute by minute. I mean, like 10, but that's fine.
I'm really loving Masters of the Air. Alex, where can the folks follow you?
You can just follow me following Caroline. Just follow Caroline around.
Just follow Caroline around. You follow Caroline around and Alex will pop
where
up
Caroline
eventually.
Is, I am too.
Actually, that will be the case this weekend. Yeah,
that's true.
Oh, yay.
Hello.
If you enjoyed this episode of Big Screen Sports, subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Rate and leave a review if you're on Apple Podcast or Spotify. If you want to support the show, pick movies for us to cover and participate in our live watches, you can join the Big Screen Sports Patreon group at patreon.com/bigscreensports. If you're a baseball fan, check out my interview series from Phenom of the Farm, which comes at you every other Tuesday. And we will be back with another rom-com next week. Thanks for listening.